Thank you. Today's call is now being recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time. Thank you.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. This is the Cross Community Working Group Drafting Team call on Thursday, the 27th of February, 2014. On the call today, we have Mikey O'Connor, Cheryl Langdon Orr, Alberto Soto, Chuck Domes, Alan Greenberg, John Beard, Becky Burr. We have no apologies. From staff, we have Mary Wong, Bart Boswinkle, Julie Hedlund, Natalie Peregrine, and myself, Terry Agnew. I'd like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you.
Thank you, Terry. Sure. And John and Becky, I don't know how you like to run this call, so I'm just going to turn it over to both of you and let me and Bart know if at any point you want us to do a brief background to this charter or any other explanation.
I was going to say it probably would be useful to have a brief background on the charter and what you were trying to accomplish as you put it together.
Sure. So the background here, and I'm pretty sure that everybody on the phone call knows this as well as I, is that 18 months ago, 20 months ago, the GNSO Council grew concerned over the mixed performance of the cross-community working groups on the jig and the jazz, and thought that it would probably be smart if there were some rules, policies, practices, and procedures, some rules governing the origination and performance of cross-community working groups. We sort of half-heartedly tried to enlist a group of folks beyond the GNSO to get involved, but ultimately decided to press on and then present our thinking to the other SOs and ACs and hoped we could get sign-on. We did sent it round, and the CCNSO responded with a set of very thoughtful, very helpful questions and guidance, which caused us to go back to the drawing board, restart, and initiate a new drafting team with co-chairs from the CCNSO and the GNSO, Becky Burr and me. You can correct that in the transcript, I suppose. And we have a draft charter that was distributed in advance of this meeting. It is our hope that we can, at least 10 days before the meeting in Singapore, when the two councils meet, have a motion that would adopt the charter as we might revise it in our drafting team and begin the work in earnest. It's pretty clear to me, and I think to Becky as well, that in the last 20 months, there has been an increased visibility for cross-community working groups. Anybody who's involved in the internet governance issue is aware of the cross-community working group that was pulled together for that. And it's worrisome that these are essentially executive-directed cross-community working groups left essentially to their own devices. And so this is an attempt to provide some form for what will be an increasingly common approach. Becky, did I miss anything?
No, I think that's right. I think it's just worth noting that this is a process that the CCNSO is particularly familiar with, because often in order to develop any kind of policy, we need to sort of build a consensus with other parts of the community before doing policy development. So it's a very comfortable and familiar and we have found it very useful process. And I think John is right that as the world becomes more complex at ICANN, it's going to be increasingly important to make sure that all of the appropriate stakeholders are at the table at the beginning.
You know, and with that, I'd open it up for comment from any of our colleagues who are also on the call, Cheryl, Chuck, Mikey, you know, anybody, Alan, I see you're on the call as well, if you wanted to jump in on this.
I just note Mary's hand is up, Joan.
Oh, great, Mary.
Thanks, John. Although I'm happy to defer to Alan or Cheryl or anyone, I just thought maybe to add to what you and Becky have said, I guess the feeling seems to be that there is the need to have this working group on these cross-community working group principles really start to develop the framework that's been talked about for a while. So you mentioned the timeline that would be ideal before Singapore. So this working group charter may to some folks look a little bit different, especially folks from the GNSO side of things, because it goes to what Becky was saying as well, that the CCNSO has a great deal of familiarity with a lot of cross-community, cross-cutting work, but the rules, processes, and chartering are different. So what was done here was to try to have a charter that would guide the working group, which hopefully will be formed quite soon, but that takes into account the differences between the two chartering organizations. The hope, of course, is that once this charter gets through this group and is approved by both councils, that hopefully folks in this group will be interested in continuing on the working group as well, since collectively there is a great deal of experience amongst the members present. So that's what I thought might be helpful to set the scene. Thanks, John. Thanks, Becky.
Let's see. Alan, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I was part of John's original group that did the GNSO work, and I haven't been part of the group that did this charter, and I haven't read it yet, to be honest. I hope what comes out of the charter and then the working group, however, is something which will provide good guidelines but not a lot of rigidity. I mean, for instance, the two chartering organizations of the group are the GNSO and the CCNSO, and yet ALAC tends to be part of many cross-community working groups. You know, we didn't get off our collective butts and participate in this more actively, but we still certainly will be participating in various groups. We're all hopeful that the GAC will be more active, and there are other parts of ICANN which may at various times be need to be more active. So I hope what comes out of this, both at the charter level and at the final product, is something which provides good guidelines but not a lot of rigidity, because we are going to be working with different mix-and-match combinations of groups, each of which, as has been pointed out, have their own general rules. And I think we need to be able to adapt. So I think we want to shy away from heavy rigidity but provide overall guidelines so people understand how they want to go. And any given working group might have rules that they add that are specific to their group when they're created, but I wouldn't want to see them laid down as laws to begin with. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Mary, your hand is still up or up again?
Actually, it's a new hand. So not so much a response to Alan, but just for the record that the chartering organizations here are the CCNSO and the GNSO, simply because that's the way that the GNSO Council in passing a motion to move these things forward had invited the CCNSO to co-chair it. And I should also add that the ALAC and members of the ALAC have been very active participants in the previous effort, as Alan has mentioned, and hopefully also in the ongoing effort.
So this is John again. Alan, I think your point is very well made, that if we try to make it too prescriptive, that it will not be very effective, that it needs to be focused more on how to reach an outcome as opposed to whether it's a number three or number two pencil that is used to fill in the form. And what I am hoping to get from the self-identified, self-interested folks who have joined us is essentially what Chuck has already done, a studied reading of the charter, with some recommendations to make it better. Becky and I have talked a little bit about the nature, the notion of consensus, and Becky, if you'd be willing to talk a little bit about that, that would be great.
Okay.
But before we get to you on that, hold that thought, let's go to Cheryl.
Thanks very much, Cheryl. For the record, and I assume there will be things like transcription, et cetera, of these calls, so I'll keep saying Cheryl for the record. I think what we've got here, and of course it is kind of amusing that here is Alan and I, and we're saying, you know, and not specifically being listed and identifying ourselves as ALACs per se, but of course it's because, you know, almost everyone on this call has had fairly extensive experience of successful loss in some cases, extremely successful. Thinking, for example, of going all the way back Bart to the cross community working group that produced the IDNCCTLD fast track, which is one I'm sure all of us are proud of. The benefits of having a good mutual framework, mutually understood framework, when we have one or more parts of ICANN that wish to work on any sort of policy development process. But when it talks about you know, policy development, the home is, of course, CSOs. I'm a little concerned that we haven't got much time, and so I think, you know, we all need to not let the perfect be in the way of the good, and then get down to it, and then make it a better model mechanism here. But there is an awful lot of experience of how to set up frameworks that works particularly well, and other parts of our organisation, ALAC, but also down into the regional at large organisations now, already look at and use what they think is the best bits from frameworks that are unashamedly stolen from the type of work that we're going to be discussing later, such as the GNSA workgroup guidelines. And, of course, many of us put in long, hard yards there to make sure that they were applicable with almost a sort of a plug-and-play capability to take the word GNSA out and put in, you know, drafting and chartering organisation in and that sort of stuff. So, yeah, it's good to see the experience here, and let's not make sure that we get too hung up in making the most perfect charter known to mankind. Thank you.
Great.
Thank you, Cheryl. Alan, is that a new hand?
Yeah, just very quickly, and responding to Mary, I wasn't trying to imply that the ALAC should have been one of the co-chartering organizations. The CCNSO responded in writing to the GNSO's guidelines. The ALAC responded rather negatively, but didn't actually put anything in writing, and the world unfolded as it should, given that we didn't take any formal action, and there's no complaint. I was just commenting that despite the only two chartering organizations of this group, further cross-community working groups, as they evolve over the years, are going to involve other groups. That was the only point.
Thank you, Alan. And Bart?
This is Bart for the Francis. And I just want to go back to, say, an earlier remark you made around the rigidity. I think the way I look at this chart and looking at some of the working groups, so I fully agree with say you don't want as you need or you want to have the needed rigidity. Sorry, but the only concern I've seen, and especially say putting on my CCNSO support hat, is that there sometimes you need very clear rules, and that was the concern of the CCNSO with the GNSO. Initial proposals or principles, you need clear rules how the SOs and AECs interact with each other, say, dealing with the product coming out of a cross-community working group and setting up the rules for such a cross-community working group. And that's, and say, what happens within the cross-community working groups and how they deal with their activities, it's not so much a matter for the charter. So my question is, where does your rigidity look at? Is that internally into the working group itself, how it and folds its work, or is it at the level of how the two or more SOs and ACs interact with each other and how they deal with the products coming out of such a working group? Thank you.
And that's a question directed to Alan?
Yeah, sorry, I was on mute. Yeah, going back to his remark around rigidity.
Alan, you want to take a whack at that?
Sure. I think we need relatively rigid, and I don't like that word, but clear rules as to if a new working group is chartered by the ALAC and the CCNSO, as an example, and we need to establish ahead of time what the process is for those groups adopting the work product of the working group, and that the ALAC can't say this was a CCNSO accepted thing if the CCNSO has not formally accepted it. So from that kind of point of view, yes, we need a certain amount of rigidity. I don't want to see a lot of rigidity at what we're going to specify for the detailed operating procedures for the working group, because the various parts of ICANN have very different procedures and very different styles, as it were. And what is going to make sense for one working group, composed of groups A and B, may make no sense at all for one composed of C and D. And I think we don't want to be too rigid on that, on guessing what the right style is going to be for how the groups do their job. So I think we need some guidelines, but I wouldn't see a lot of rigidity, because they just may not apply to... given the mix of people in some future cross-working group.
This is
okay,
John again. One of the areas where what we're talking about here in terms of rigidity maybe intersects with one of the comments that Chuck offered up is in the notion of members versus membership on the working group. Chuck, am I seeing something I shouldn't, or am I correct in thinking that a discussion about how we construct the working group is, in your view, is it sort of overly architected at this point?
Well, thanks, John. This is Chuck. I think that's a good example of an area where it seems very rigid. Now, maybe there's some reason for that I don't understand, but... my reaction was that was probably not adequate, especially since it applies to SOs and ACs as a whole. Just using the GNSO, for example, is one enough from the GNSO? I'm not sure it is, considering the diversity in the GNSO. Is a max of four enough, considering how many stakeholder groups and constituencies you have. Now, they're minimum and maximums, I understand that. But, yeah, I think that's an example of rigidity that we don't need. Now, we may, for practicality, to make it workable, we may want to have some maximum, and that may be okay. But I think four is pretty low. Now, we may not get more than four, and that's okay. But, I think, John, you identified one area where I think it seems pretty rigid. Now, if there's good justification for that, I'd like to hear it. But that was why I put that comment in there.
All right. So I see Becky's hand up. But before I kick it over to you, Becky, I think when I looked at the draft charter, Chuck, I saw the minimum as – a way to put a hook into an SO and an AC so that once this work proceeded, people couldn't say that they didn't know anything about it and therefore didn't have to participate. And a maximum is driven by practicality in terms of how big is too big before you can't get anything done. So I think the minimum and maximum were driven for different reasons. I still think both of them are good reasons, but I'm not wedded to either. So I'll turn it over to Becky.
So let me just say, obviously, I think you have to have a minimum of one, otherwise it's not a cross-constituency group. So if you don't have a, you know, if you don't have a a participant, you can't be a part. You can't be participating. So that makes perfect sense to me. And I think, you know, a maximum of four is, first of all, this is, you know, it's a kind of light brainstorming, coming together, putting together some ideas and proposals and a paper on how this kind of thing could work best. What we've found is that that we need at least two meetings to discuss any particular topic or text in order to get all of the, you know, participants from around the globe involved in the conversation. So the more participants you have, the more complicated, you know, the logistics come. Now, you know, if the number was, and then the other thing is just realistically, I don't know about ALAC, but the CCs don't have the quite the body count that the JNSO does. So we're likely to have, you know, a smaller group of people who are interested. So four would be perfectly adequate, but if there's, you know, you put out, the GNSO puts out a call for volunteers, and there are many more, then obviously we'd have to come back and think about that again. I just don't want to have a, if we can avoid it, a working group of 36.
Right. I don't do well in crowds either, Becky. Cheryl?
Thanks, John. Cheryl, against the record. It's interesting because listening to you, Chuck, and it's good to see you're following me again, what I was hearing from you made me realize I had read and interpreted this 1/4 options here as absolutely perfect for the purposes of the exercise that we are tasked with here in this drafting team. And I'm very comfortable with that. But listening to you, I thought, hang on a minute, Chuck, we're not building the principles of all the future guidelines yet. But what you were saying is very relevant there. And there are times when, of course, you do require geographic diversity within a chartering organisation or set of chartering organisations to ensure that, you know, everyone at the table feels equitably represented, et cetera, et cetera. But for the purposes of this exercise, of what we're doing with cross-community working groups, I'm very comfortable with a minimum of one for all the reasons that Becky's obviously outlined. And, you know, four means that, you know, at least two of you can be awake at any one time and probably managing a meeting. But some of what I think you were raising is integrated very closely with our next section for discussion from your notes, and that's members versus observers, because in some cases giving an observer status to someone is as important as an inverted commas official seat at the table. Thank you.
Thank you. Chuck?
Thanks, John. First of all, am I correct that the charter is for the working group? We're not talking
correct.
About the
correct.
Numbers for this drafting team.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So let me talk about the minimum of one. You're absolutely right that you have to have at least one from each SO. But what happens if that person is absent? And they will be. There's no backup. There's nobody to cover for that SO, let alone the different factions of that SO or AC. So I just think that one is too small from a practical point of view, because none of us, if we're on that working group, will be able to make every meeting. And if you only have one, you have one whole SO or AC that's not represented in any given meeting, and that requires then duplicating, rediscussing some of the issues that were discussed in that meeting. So, by the way, I'm not rigid on this. If most of you want one and four, I can live with that. I at least wanted to bring this out as a practical matter.
Okay. Mary, do you want to jump in, then we'll go back to Cheryl?
Sure. Thanks, John. So it was just to say that in some groups that we've done, and I think some of you have been in some of those groups, that there's been one primary representative and one alternate. So both of them can attend the calls, but that seems to alleviate the problem that Chuck is alluding to. I'm not necessarily offering as a solution, but just in case not everybody is aware that that may be a possibility.
Becky, I don't. I think actually the point about one is quite sensible. I don't think we need to, you know, have a member and an alternative. So I'm, you know, I would be happy to say the minimum should be two, and then, you know, Chuck, I just don't have a feel for what you think the maximum. You know, how big the maximum needs to be to satisfy interest in participation at the GNSO level.
Can I respond to that, John?
Sure, go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck, again. I don't want it to be too big either, although I've been involved in, and am involved in one right now, working groups where there's between 30 and 40 people, and it's going pretty well, and it allows you to spread out the work a lot better. But I don't want it to be very big. I just think four is maybe too limiting. Keeping in mind that we're talking about at the SO and AC level, what are we going to have? Three, maybe four of those involved in a working group, and sometimes less? So I don't know. I think it could be more than that. In many cases, we'll probably only have three. So if you did six as a maximum, is that that even with four SOs, ACs, you're talking about 24? And we all know that you're going to have particularly active members and some that are less active. Now, again, we come into the observers and the voting members, which is another way, the way this charter is drafted, that could be controlled a little bit. But and we're going to have to be clear. What do these apply to? Are these just voting members that we're talking about when we say one and four, or are they voting members and observers? I suspect you probably meant voting members, John, when you drafted this. But
my thinking was voting members. That's true, Chuck.
Yeah, okay. So maybe that's the way to cover it, although I think it would be helpful to have an alternate, doesn't have to be called an alternate voting member when the other one's absent, so from an SO or an AC. Thanks.
Okay. You're right. All right, Cheryl?
Thanks, John. Cheryl here. I'm going to follow Chuck, and I'm glad I did. Chuck, you drifted off into what I think is the work of our group that we're drafting for, as opposed to us drafting for the group, just in part of that. So I was with you and then you lost me. I really don't care whether there's some newly structured future where there's 16 different types of support organisations, and we could have an even higher level order of math that you did. That's kind of irrelevant. I think for the purposes of this exercise, these numbers, but if you want to make it, you know, five or however many, I don't have it, I'm not going to die in a ditch over it. But what is important is that there is a principle of, if there is no representation from one of what we would be comfortable calling stakeholders, major actors, significantly interested parties, I don't care what word you put in there, but if none of that identifiable group is in any way represented, no decision can be made. I think that's the fallback. And certainly, John, I agree. I was thinking that this was clearly voting. Members, capital M, is a vote-related part. And, of course, observers, as you all rightly observed, pardon the pun, which was deliberate, gives you a great deal of accountability in these sorts of processes. But the thing that I guess we also need to understand early on is putting on my CCNSO hat, which I'm very comfortable to wear, we run some pretty damned large groups too, guys. And you want to talk diversity? It's just not aligned as sub-filters of constituencies. It's about as diverse as it gets out there. And there's principles that have become excellent standard operational practices, such as was mentioned earlier, where there is never a single read-through. You have to have, first read-through and then second and sometimes third and some of us feel perhaps 15th read-throughs that happen. And what that does is minimise the risk of underrepresentation of interested parties in the processes. So if we've got something in this charter which ensures that there is no risk of valid criticism of process and outcome because of underrepresentation, then I think we're home and hosed, and I'll get off my soapbox. Thank you.
It's not that big a soapbox, Cheryl. Alan?
Thank you. I have a question before I make my comment, because I'm getting more and more confused. Are we talking about, and for instance, when we're talking about 1 to 4 or 2 to 5 or whatever the number is, are we talking about the working group that is going to look at CWG rules, or are we talking about some future CWG that will be brought into existence to look at some issue?
I'm working on the former.
These rules would apply only to the work of this cross-constituency working group.
Our work at hand.
Our work at hand. So it's not some future group that will be chartered to look at IDN squared, but this. Okay.
No. Just us.
Then
the buddies.
Then I will... I was making my original comment about avoid rigidity about the future work product rules, but I'll apply it here. I think we want something like a target of between 1 and 4 or 2 and 5. As an example, Cheryl, a valid, hopefully valuable contributor to this process, is not a member of any AC or SO. She used to be, but isn't. I'm a member of an AC, but I may not be by the time this group is to have finished its work. I think we need targets, not necessarily hard numbers. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. And this is John again. As I said earlier, I don't think that our work will be as useful as it could be if we are too prescriptive. And we should be looking to focus on the outcomes and supporting an approach that allows us to get to those outcomes. I see Mikey, you got your hand up?
Yeah, this is Mikey. Thanks, John. I'm sort of with you. I'd like to get us kind of through this one. I don't have real strong opinions about any of this, but it doesn't seem to me to be a big deal to have a couple people as the minimum. I like Mary's way out of the problem. If nobody subscribes from a given ACSO, we aren't paralyzed. So, I thought that was good. And I don't know that we need a max. But if other people feel strongly about that, that's fine. I like Becky's idea of reconsider if it gets too big. But instead of max 5, I'd just say no maximum. But I would like to get us on to the meaty bits of this charter, which is the mission and scope part, if we can.
Becky, you got your hand up. You want to tee up that transition?
Yeah, I sort of liked Chuck's construct was, since we're only talking about voting members and there's no limit on other people who can participate as if they're members. It seems like that ought to be, especially since, you know, my hope is that we will be guided by consensus, that something like that is fine. I think, you know, I would prefer to have a sort of maximum of voting members subject to reconsideration if that is not adequate to serve the needs of any particular constituency.
Mary, did you capture that?
Yes, John.
Mikey, having volunteered without knowing it, why don't you lead us into some of the meatier aspects of the charter?
This is Mikey. You are tricky, aren't you? That would be great. I was on the drafting team along with Chuck and you and Jonathan. And this mission and scope section was, I've been through it fairly carefully, and I'm pretty comfortable with it. I think many of the points that we were making earlier in the call are captured in here. Bart, for example, made the point that we need to deal with the question of how the outputs of this working group are handled, and I see a bullet that gives this soon-to-be-formed working group the chance to deal with that, so I liked that. I also thought that this mission and scope was pretty well aligned with Alan's idea that we put fence posts out there, not super prescriptive details, and leave a little bit of room for the, you know, cross-community working groups that are going to be formed to meld and mold their approach within fairly broad guidelines. So I was pretty comfortable with the mission and scope and just wanted to check and see how other people were feeling about that, because for me this is the meat of it, and the, you know, if there are sort of technical details like membership, I think we're all sort of saying we don't feel terribly strongly about that, but I think if we've got the mission and scope right, then we're pretty far down the line. Thanks.
So do I see the green checks from Becky and Chuck with regard to Mikey's point that the mission and scope seem to have gotten it right? And Alberto as well, and Cheryl as well. Okay, I sit on so many of these calls where the goal is to keep it to an hour. I don't really need to feel the need to stretch this to an hour. And I've been thinking early on, in particular, since I was looking at Chuck's comments before. Am I being heard or no?
Yes.
Okay, cool. What I'd like to do is to take other discussion points as the members on the call see them and create an annotated version of the charter that we can distribute in an asynchronous email format and settle upon our own consensus on what the charter should look like. We can have one more call so as to convince each other of the error of our colleagues' ways and then be confident in moving forward. Yes, Becky, I know that you wanted to bring up the consensus point, and I certainly think we want to talk about that. But I just want to make sure that as Mikey led the charge on the mission and objectives, as Chuck has led the charge on membership, that if there are other pieces of this, whether it's objectives and goals or outcomes that you want to have, that you want to say something about, please put it on the table now so that we can be complete. And so, Becky, I will turn it over to you to talk about the consensus matter.
Okay. I have never seen this construction of, you know, sort of distinguishing between full consensus and consensus. And to me, I think that we ought to be just, you know, consensus is consensus. That's our goal. If we have it, we can say we have consensus. If we don't have consensus, we can articulate what the variety of views and how, you know, how subscribed those competing views are. But I am very uncomfortable with anything that sort of starts to talk about, you know, qualities of consensus. And I don't see the need to say no consensus, but strong support for a specific position. I just think we ought to, the goal ought to be to describe what the level of consensus and the variety of views are at the end of the day.
This is John. Before we move on, I think that I have felt in the water at ICANN an increase in the parsing of consensus. I made a cheeky reference to the IGO-INGO working group that Thomas Rickert led out of the GNSO Council, but I may be wrong. I just may be living in a far corner of the community. But that's just my thought. I certainly would like to take your position on this, Becky. It either is or it isn't, right? And I see that Alberto has also added something into the chat. And I see that Mary and Mikey have their hands up. I don't know who went first, so how about I take Mary and you give us maybe some history, and then Mikey.
Thanks, John. Without going into the IGO working group that I helped support, and there's actually an issue with how consensus levels are currently defined in the GNSO specifically that a committee is looking at, as a number of people on the call know. But coming back to this draft charter, I think that the intent here was to base the distinctions on what is currently in the GNSO working group guidelines, understanding that because this the working group that's going to be formed will have representatives from other SOs and ACs whose rules are different, it wouldn't be appropriate to import all the GNSO guidelines wholesale into this charter. That said, given the differing views on what consensus means, whether it's full consensus or consensus, it may actually be necessary or at least useful for this drafting team to figure out if there can be at least some sort of, if not a definition, certainly some sense of what one means by consensus, because it may be that even amongst the participants, from different SOs and ACs, there's a different understanding of what consensus means. So while this is by no means the only way of doing it, perhaps there ought to be some indication in the charter as to what the drafting team means when it says consensus.
Mikey?
This is Mikey. I'll follow on pretty much out of the same hymns that Mary was just quoting. These are quite familiar from the GNSO. These are embedded in our work rules. And I'm sort of casting my mind back to the DSSA working group, which was another cross-constituency working group. And we used this same set of tiers, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's much easier, and we've all been chairs of working groups, and so speaking sort of chair to chair, it's a lot easier if you just have full consensus. And Alberto's right, you know, in the purest sense, consensus is everybody agrees. The trouble with that is that there are gray areas, and what the GNSO was trying to do when it built these tiers was allow a little bit of flexibility for a group to move forward when the sort of IETF version of consensus existed. The IETF says consensus is when there's a very strong agreement and the people who disagree feel that their view has been heard and well discussed, and while they still disagree, they feel they've had a chance to have their say. And so there, that gray area between the in the middle is really aimed at that. I would caution us to be careful in this working group to define a new version of consensus, because I think we could get quite handily sidetracked in that. So either this kind of an approach using the GNSO tiers is fine. If this makes people really uncomfortable, I'm certainly interested in exploring other options. So that's, you know, it's, Becky's got a good point in the chat. We are not drafting policy. And so you're in the queue. I'll let you expand on that. And I'm certainly willing to hear a different way, but I certainly see the genealogy of why these are in there. Thanks.
All right, so Cheryl, if you would allow Becky to jump the queue.
I'd rather not, but I will.
No, it's fine. I think Cheryl can go. We're all talking about the same thing.
All right, Cheryl.
Thank you. Unless, of course, it was a right to reply, Becky, in which course I would step aside. I actually, when I put my hand up, didn't realise Mikey was going to start calling this a prayer book, because I was going to suggest I was going to add my voice to the chorus. I think in principle, this what we discussed in chat and Becky's principles, yep, sure, I have no problem at all. But if in the absence, I think in the absence of having some set of established criteria, and believe me, the very many hours that went into bludgeoning out these tiers for, and I do mean literally both EA and ERE, for the GNSO guidelines on this, we would be somewhat remiss if we did not refer to them or something like them. So I'm in full support of having, for use when it becomes necessary, a set of criteria that is a mutually understood and agreed to set of terms. Look, you know, in theory, absolutely, Becky, yeah. My personal view of consensus is when everyone is equally uncomfortable. So, and I've just finished the policy SIG here at Apricot, which of course gives even yet another variation on the IETF theme of what is a consensus. So, so that we don't spend too much time having the conversation we're having right now, let's put in some set of criteria. Thank you.
Okay. And Becky?
One of the things that we might say is, you know, the members of the GNSO would characterize whatever the positions were in whatever the way the GNSO defines it. I have to say, in the CCNSO, we take the, you know, if everybody pretty much agrees and nobody says they're going to die in a ditch over something, we have consensus, but we also don't have the problem saying, but some people really strongly objected to that, and identifying numbers and stuff. I don't think I was aware of these, sort of flavors of consensus in the GNSO, and I don't know if I speak for the whole CCNSO, but I am personally extremely uncomfortable with these kind of tiers, and I guess I don't understand how within a working group that's drafting, you know, sort of recommendations, a flexible framework, why we would anticipate the need to have sort of rigid categorizations of the outcomes.
Chuck, you want to jump in?
Chuck, you're on, you must be on mute.
Thanks, I was. All right. First of all, I think any time we require full consensus, it's a recipe for a roadblock, a paralysis.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's not bad having that category, because I think if a working group in the ideal case has full consensus, it sends a nice message and communicates something. So that would be my first point. My second point is that I guess it's more of a question. Is anybody uncomfortable with that consensus definition that is in there right now, a position where a small minority disagrees but most agree? Mary referred to the IGO working group, and the first two were I think, easy to handle. The third one is a different story, and Becky, this is where I – you know, and in fact, I agree with you. This is it's a problematic category, and you can tell by my comments there that it's a problem. So I personally would have no objection to dropping that one, even though it's still in the GNSO procedures. But also note that the IGO-INGO working group recommended that the GNSO go back and look at that. Because we did run into some problems with that. So I think the first two categories are fine, I hope, and I'm curious what others think. I would have no problem dropping the third. So I'll stop there.
When you say drop the third, Chuck, this is John, you mean the no consensus but strong support?
Yes, that's the one I'm talking about. I think to use that, that's why I raised this one, because you can see what I said there. I mean, is strong more support than significant opposition? Is strong more powerful
right.
than significant? I don't know. I think that's what was meant. But it's a tough one, and I'm not sure it gains us anything, especially if we're going to look for at least consensus as defined in the charter now, then does the other one really matter?
Right. All right, this is John. Before, Alan, you come back on, Mary, if you just take note in the chat that it looks like we're circling around eliminating that no consensus, the strong support category. As someone who is not new but not old with regard to working groups, how did unanimity become full consensus? I mean, that's what we're really talking about here, right? It's unanimity, consensus, and no consensus or divergence. Anyway, I just offer that up as a wild hare. Don't want to get us confused. Alan, you want to jump in?
I'll answer that question very quickly first, because we have used the word consensus in ICANN, and we have many different definitions, and each person has had their own, and the GNSO felt a need to have clarity to make sure everyone was using the terms in the same way, and these were the words that they came up with. Because in the more general sense, as this very discussion has illustrated, different parts of ICANN and different individuals within a group take different meanings from the word consensus. So that's why we have it. However, I didn't raise my hand to answer your last question. As I was listening to this discussion, I was tempted when I got my turn to talk to ask the same question I asked before. Are we talking about the future working group rules for some new cross-working group in the future, or are we talking about the work that's going to be done in the next N months? And I think the answer is the work that's going to be done in the next N months. And given the original comment I made about rigidity and lack thereof, I am 100% with Becky on this one. If this group cannot come to agreement, pretty well full unanimity or very close to it, then we've identified an area where the future working groups will need flexibility. And we need to change the rules. If everyone in this working group that's setting the rules for the future working groups cannot come to closure, then we've identified something where there is a different, strong difference of opinion, and our chartering organizations and the other ones that are going to have to buy into it if they want to participate in some future working group will have to buy into it, and there's differences of opinion in the group. So although I support the levels of consensus, when we're talking about the substantive issues, the policy issues, the issues that, that future cross-working groups will look at, in this working group, I think we need pretty well complete buy-in, or we've identified something where we're being too rigid and too specific because people have different opinions and we need to change the words. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Alan. Becky, I'll give you the last word before we wrap up.
Perhaps we should, I assume we'll have a between calls listserv. Perhaps we should just try to articulate sort of where we're coming from here. Because I find that I understand where these tiers might be relevant in the event that you are making policy and imposing things on somebody, but I don't understand their role in this context. So what I suggest is, you know, we start an email discussion on this and see if we can forge some consensus.
I totally agree. So, Mary, I turn to you and ask, how quickly do you think you and Becky and I can agree on an annotated version of the charter that we can circulate as the point of departure for that discussion?
So I can probably have something to you and Becky within the next day or so, and presumably you want to set a date for the next call as well. So it seems that the sooner I get it to the two of you, the sooner we can finalize that in the run-up to Singapore. Would that work?
Yeah, that'd be great. And if we were looking at a date for the next for another call, it would probably be what, sometime the week of the 10th.
Yeah.
Would this hour on that week's Thursdays work for everybody? We could do it on the March 13th at 9, I don't know, what time is it now? It's 1 o'clock in California.
So 2100 UTC, John?
Yeah, yeah, same time on the Thursday, so it would be March 13th. We could target that.
Yeah. Although, John, just to note, I think...
FOIWG meeting at that time, I just want to check
that. Yes, half of us can't make it.
Sorry. Well, then we'll have to find another time to do it.
Doodle before, John.
Yeah, I'll send out a doodle poll for that week, John, if that's all right, because I can check the calendar. Well, whatever meetings are already scheduled should be on the main ICANN calendar that we have. And just noting that I think that week the U.S. might have gone back to daylight savings, so we'll use UTC time for everybody.
Thank the blessed gods themselves on that.
The CCNSO and GNSO Council meetings in Singapore are on Wednesday, March 26th, which means that if we are to have a call the week of the 10th, we'll pretty quickly have to turn around the motions for the councils, because we'll need them out when the GNSO needs them 10 days in advance. So maybe earlier in the week, maybe the 10th or the 11th of March would be better.
Yeah, why don't we quickly do a doodle
poll? Okay. All right, I don't want to hear myself talk, and I'm sure you don't want to hear me talk either. Becky, your hand is up.
Oh, I just forgot to put it down.
Okay. All right, well, look, thank you all. I hope this wasn't too painful for you, but the fact is if we're successful, they will have statues of us in front of the individual ICANN offices around the globe.
Now, that's a scary thought, John.
Thanks, John.
Bye-bye.
Bye.